Okay, I wanted to give another one today based on, I remember back in May I had asked you what it was that you would like to hear, and I had several people that wrote and said, here's the things that I would like to hear, so I'm going to do that today. But before I do that, I saw something online, may have even been on one of your Facebook pages or Instagram pages, I don't know, but I saw it, and it struck me hard. So I thought I would put this up for you to see. Does that hit anybody like it hit me? I was listening to someone the other day say, 20 years ago when the music was really good, and I was thinking, no, it wasn't 20 years ago, it was 40 or 50 years ago, and then I started to realize just how old I feel. So the difference between 1971 and 2023 is the same as 1971 to 1919. My dad was born in 1912. So it goes back a ways. I always thought that was so very old. It does not feel so very old anymore. But anyway, what I want to do today is get into one of the topics that was brought up today. And there are several of you that requested this. And as I was going through some of the questions that you asked, it reminded me of some things that I was going through when I was in my training in the Dallas church. So I'm going to talk about a few stories from back in that time that will hopefully help you out. So again, one of the topics that was requested was on marriage. Now, if I conglomerate all of the emails together, it came up with four basic questions that were asked, and they're worded it differently in different emails, but here are the four questions, and I hope that you can see that. The first one was, why is society pushing against traditional marriage? Why is it that society today says that you don't need to do traditional marriage, you should just be living together? How did that even happen, and why is that something that's coming about right now? Second question that was asked, and this is an important one, and I actually will spend quite a bit of time on this today. Why is society pushing men to be less masculine? That is an issue that is affecting the church big time. Not just society, but it's also affecting the church. And so we need to, something that we need to address. I'll probably be stepping on some toes today. But something that I think we probably need to hear. The third one was, what are the roles of marriage? What's the role of a wife? What's the role of a husband? They're good to review. There's nothing new there. You all know what I'm going to say. But I think that I'll be able to give you some ideas that will help you in marriage. If you're dating, it will help you prepare for marriage. If you're already married, it will help you in dealing with things that come up. I was actually texting with someone yesterday who has just started into a relationship, and she texted me and said, I wonder what our first fight will be about. And I wrote back and said, it'll come, trust me. It's just one of those things. And then the last one was, what does it mean to submit? And that's, we've talked about that before, but I want to go through that again, because that's a bad word in modern day parlance. Submit and obey, those are two things that are kind of tough. So we'll go through those today. What I want to do is cover the first two questions and not necessarily go through a lot of scripture, but just talk about why, here's the first one, why is society pushing against traditional marriage? If you look at what is going on in the world today, you recognize the fact that what we grew up with is not what society is teaching now. There's so much that's going on right now that is so very different. I always go back to my parents because that's what I grew up with. My mom and dad, when they got married, there was never a question about living together prior to marriage. There was never a question about divorce. There were rules. And these weren't religious rules. They were just what people did. Whether you were religious or not, you didn't live together before marriage. You got married and you stayed with them. So why is society pushing against it? As I got to doing some research on this, I came up with some of the arguments that people have against traditional marriage. So I wanted to give you four of those points today, and then we'll discuss them as we go through. Here's the first argument. Humans evolved. We were protoplasm slime in some stream somewhere, and we evolved into animals, and we're like... just a little bit above the apes, and they don't get married. And so since we evolved, there's no need for marriage. We should be like the animals, and they probably overlook the fact that some animals do partner up and stay together, which they do. Kyler can probably give you a list of a lot of them that do, based on his research. But people look at that and they say, if we evolved, then marriage is a man-made institution. And if it's a man-made institution, then it's subject to change or dismissal. So that's one of the arguments. The second argument that I found was, marriage, it's created by religion. So therefore, it's superstition. If you're atheistic and you look at that, then you would recognize the fact that, since we evolved and since there is this crazy rite called marriage, this is just a superstition. Something that someone wanted to foist on you so that you would feel bad if you didn't do it the way they think it should be done. And the way they think is a kind of the litmus test for today. It's what I think. I don't care what anybody else thinks. So marriage was created by religion, and as religion changes, which it certainly has, then the marriage can change too. And so they see that as man-made, as religious, as ridiculous, and therefore subject to change. Here's the third one, and I've heard this, and you probably have too. Divorce is messy, and it's costly. So it's better to just, and I'm saying from the world's perspective, it's better to just live together so that if it doesn't work out, then you don't have to hire lawyers and lose all your money and all of that. You can just separate, go your separate ways. I actually listened to a very interesting podcast this week. A lady was saying they did you can do a study on anything, but this particular study she did was on married couples, and there was one criteria. Do you have a shared bank account, or do you have your own bank account? Now, there's nothing wrong with either one of them. She just was wanting to know what that did in a marriage. I want to say it was something like 60 or 65% of the people that shared a bank account, in other words, all the money was common in the house, were happier than people that had their own separate bank accounts. Because, I've got mine and she's got hers, and they allow that separation to occur. So divorce is messy. Better to just live together because it makes the option to leave easier. And that's the key word, an option. People go into marriage seeing it as an option, right? Okay, I'll go through this silly rite, but because I want mom and grandma to be happy, but if I have to leave, then go. And the fourth one is what I call try before you buy. People say, how do I know if I'm going to like this person? We date, but when you date, you always put your best foot forward. And anyone that's dating out there knows that when you first start dating, you put your best foot forward, right? You put on clean pressed clothes and you brush your hair and you brush your teeth, and they don't see the person that wakes up in the morning before they've had their cup of coffee. And so what I want to do, I'm again speaking from the worldly perspective, I want to live with a person first so that I see whether I want to try it before I buy into this whole marriage thing. Well, what happens with that? I have a very good friend living in Dallas. She got engaged. It's not a church member, somebody that I worked with. She got engaged probably 20 or 25 years ago, and they're still engaged. And they're living together at this. She sees no reason to get married. They're living together. They're happy. So they tried before they buy, but then they decided they didn't need to buy. And so they just stay separate. Why is society pushing against traditional marriage? We'll talk more about the influence of that as we go. But these are kind of the arguments that people have about not having a traditional marriage. Now, related to that, why is society pushing men to be less masculine? Why is society pushing men to be less masculine? I did not need to put any of this on PowerPoint except for this slide, because I wanted to actually see this. What I looked up was, again, I go out and I do research all the time, and I go out and I ask questions a certain way. Why are men so bad? Why are men good? Why this and why that? And I came up with this phrase, and you've probably heard it before, called toxic masculinity. Okay, you know what I'm saying? We've all heard that. And I thought, what is toxic about being masculine? So here's the definition. And again, it's probably a little bit small, so let me read it to you. What is toxic masculinity? Masculinity becomes toxic when men feel they need to conform to rigid gender norms, which include acting like a bully to maintain a constant competitive edge. Avoid losing at all costs. Again, I had a friend one time that said, I will never lose a public argument with my wife. They're not doing too well either. Restraining one's emotions except for pride and anger, which are the only acceptable masculine emotions to express. Showing strength and aggression in moments of conflict, and being dominant over women and other men, which typically is displayed in microaggressions. Now, what's wrong with that statement? I would ask for a show of hands, but I won't do that. But read through this. Here's the thing that pops out at me when I looked at this. It almost came out underlined or in bold. Rigid gender norms. It is not normal for men to be bullies. It's not. In fact, most men that are bullies are really insecure. Bullies, when I was growing up in school, the bullies were the kids that their parents treated them bad or slapped them around or whatever, and they ended up kind of getting this defense mechanism of being a bully. It's not normal to avoid losing at all costs. That's an improper role for a man. To restrain your emotions, except for pride and anger. Sorry, folks, I cry all the time. I do. That's just who I am. I don't apologize for it. Probably makes Marlis a little irritated every once in a while, especially if I do it in a sermon. But I do. Showing strength and aggression in moments of conflict. I'm going to be the dominant here. And being dominant over men and over women. None of those things are norms, and they shouldn't be seen as norms. But what's happened is, this is true, this happens. There are men that are bullies, and there are men that are aggressive, and there are men that don't treat women right. And because of that, we've got this term out there called toxic masculinity. And it's gotten to the place now where, because there are some men like that, then all men get kind of thrown into this pot of, we need for men to be less of a bully. I agree with that. They need to be less domineering over women. I agree with that. But they don't need to be less masculine. And that's gotten all tied together into one thing. Now let's look at the other side of this. This is, somebody else wrote this, and that's why I wanted to put this title out there. Masculinity isn't toxic. It's the men who aren't masculine who are toxic. Now that's a great statement. Men that aren't masculine become toxic. They become bullies. They become somebody that they shouldn't become. The rest of this is a little overboard, but I'll read it. Weak little men use and abuse women instead of stepping up to lead and protect them. Now, there's truth in that. It's just a little over campy to me, but anyway. Our society is suffering from a shortage of real masculinity, not toxic masculinity. There's nothing wrong with the term masculinity. And it brings great harm to women and children who have no protectors. Now, we'll talk about that the more we go. The other side of this argument would say that true masculinity is fulfilling the correct role that a male should fulfill. And if a male is accepting and living by the standards that God sets up for him, then masculinity becomes a value, becomes an asset. It becomes something that you're looking for. So what happens now when you're in a world where women who look at this patriarchal society, that was a word I was trying to come up with last week and it just wouldn't come out of my mouth, a patriarchal society where men have been the ones to be the aggressors and the dominant ones. And you can look back in history and you can see that. I think about the way churches used to be. Men were on one side, women were on the other. Okay, that was in the early United States. But before that, men were in front and women were in back because it was more important for the men to be taught. There was a period of time in the Middle Ages where it was felt that a woman shouldn't learn how to read or write or do arithmetic because if she did, her brain would explode. That is in a science journal. Okay? All right, so what happens when you get into a society where there is a problem with men in their proper roles? Then you get women who want to be outside of their proper roles, and now we've got the battle of the sexes. Who were the two tennis players that did that? Billie Jean King and
Bobby Riggs.
Hey, do you remember that? Where they got into this battle of the sexes, and he brought out a lollipop to give to her, and she brought out a pig. And they just went back and forth, and it was kind of all for good fun, but that was real. So what happens is, if you've got this society where men are not in their proper role, then you get women who will leave their proper role because they feel like they're being dumped on. What you ended up with was, in the 1960s, which is hinted at in what Doug Johnson went through, where this idea of feminism comes in. We're not going to take this anymore. I remember one of the commercials that came out then is, "You've got your own cigarette now, baby. You've come a long, long way." Remember that? Virginia Slims. You don't need to smoke men's cigarettes anymore. You've got your own. And we had some unfortunate things that happened during that time where this feminist voice started to increase. So I looked up I looked up what feminism meant to someone who would go by this, and it came up with basically five different points, and you've got them there on the screen. So I want to go through these and talk about how they are appropriate, because some of them are, and how it can be inappropriate. So here's the first one: working to increase equality. All right, now, if we're talking about the job site, I agree with that 100%. Most of my time when I worked for telecommunications, I had a female boss, and I didn't have a problem with it in the world. I could submit to her authority. She was very good at running the company, and I had no problems with it. Working to increase equality is not a bad thing in the workforce, but it is a problem if by equality means I want to assume your role. Because men and women have specific roles that God intended for them to enact, and for a reason. And again, we'll get into that. So in the workplace, absolutely. But in the family roles, God defined those roles. Here's the second one: expanding human choice. I completely disagree with that. Whenever I see human choice, I always think of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, where Adam and Eve were told, make a choice. Here's the one God said that I want you to choose. And Satan comes along and says, no, here's the one that I want you to choose. And so Adam and Eve had to make a human choice. Folks, humans choose badly. We do. We make really bad decisions as human beings. Instead of saying, what choice do I want in my life? We've stopped asking the questions, what does God want me to choose? What does God want me to become? As a man or as a woman, what does God want me to become? We've pushed that aside because, after all, humans evolved and marriage is just religion. So let's set aside these gender roles and let's start to amalgamate them together. The third one, eliminating gender stratification, where men typically inhabit higher status than women. Again, in the workplace, I have no problem with that. Like I say, having a female manager has never bothered me. But here's the problem with when you think of gender stratification. If you think of that as men are up here and women are down here, now we've got a problem. Because God did not create women to be under, for their role to be less important than a man's role. Our roles are equal. And our roles are both necessary. But society has seen this in a different way. Both roles are necessary for a stable family. And if we understand our role and we stay in our lane, then what you're going to see toward the end of this is it actually produces a much stronger bond between a husband and a wife. And more stable kids along the way, too. The fourth thing, ending sexual violence. Obviously, I absolutely agree with that. There's too much of that out there right now. It sickens me to, when I get on the news, there's some girl that's gotten kidnapped somewhere. And I will say this about that. I always look at the reasons why. This is kind of my own statement. I probably shouldn't even say this. But when a girl gets abducted, raped, killed, whatever, I often look at the circumstances. She left a bar at 2 in the morning with someone she didn't know. Or she was walking home alone at 3 in the morning after having studied all night or whatever. There's, you got to make yourself a harder target. But at the same time, men should not be saying, oh, here's an opportunity. I'm going to take this opportunity. That's toxic and that's wrong. So I agree with that one. Last one I totally disagree with, promoting sexual freedom. I actually had to look this one up to try and figure out what they were talking about. Let me read to you this one website on what this means. This liberation, sexual freedom, resided in the struggle for a sexual life that was not exclusively reproductive. Okay, what does that mean? It's a lot of words. There was a time in early United States and in Europe before the United States became a thing that sex, even in marriage, was wrong unless you were trying to have a baby. That was the only time sex was allowed, was trying to have a baby. And I've seen movies on this where there would be this whole ritual of going to the minister and saying, now we're going to try and have a baby. Well, okay, but you know, just make it quick or whatever. And it just, that's just was wrong. So they're fighting against that. Okay, now here's the problem. They're also throwing the baby out with the bathwater. Let me read the whole statement. This liberation resided in the struggle for a sexual life that is not exclusively reproductive and that it is extricated from the institution of marriage. Okay, now we've got a problem. So sex in marriage is something that should be enjoyed, but sex outside of marriage should not be. But to promote sexual freedom, you throw it all out. And everybody should be free to do anything. And you come up with this free love thing that started in the 1800s, if you can believe it started that far back. And in the roaring 1920s, the first book on it was written in like 1884. Yeah. And by the 1920s, the roaring 20s, it was real open. And then by the 1960s, it had become a very common phrase or word. People were just into that. But again, when you work at this where you've got a society that where men were not in their proper role, then it encourages women to get out of their proper role. And now we've got this battle. And it's exactly what Satan wants. He doesn't want strong marriages, and there's a reason for that. So take all these points that I've just been talking about, and let's apply them to marriage. Men's and women's roles are different and equal. Men, you should not look at your wives as being less than you, less important. Our roles are identically equal in God's eyes because He created the role of female and the role of male. So one's not above the other, but they're different. They're different and equal. Again, one isn't higher than the other. One isn't better than the other. We're going to turn in a little while to Ephesians chapter 5. You might be heading over there, as you can expect. That's where people normally go. We'll talk about that in Ephesians 5. Now, I'm going to make two statements here. I'm going to use the word society, but as I say that, I'd like for you to think the word Satan. Society drove men who are stronger physically and usually more aggressive to mistreat women rather than build their role up. Society has driven men to be more aggressive and to try and subjugate women. As a result, society then drove women to rise up and confront this treatment. And neither one of those should have ever occurred. So let's look at the roles that are defined by God, and we should see ourselves as not having a choice to try and change His design. So let's go into Ephesians chapter 5. Oh, no, sorry. Not yet. I wanted to use this as an example. Roles in marriage are defined by God, and we shouldn't see ourselves as having a choice of changing it. Here's an example of it. Remember when God created Lucifer, you read that back in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, where He said in Isaiah 14, I'm not happy with the role that God gave me, so I will ascend above the clouds. I will be higher than the angels. I will be like the Most High. He was trying to get himself to a position that he was never offered. God created him and put him in a specific role. And He did that with the angels too. Look at what this says in Jude 1 verse 6. It says, the angels who did not keep their proper domain, God created them with a specific role, and they decided they didn't like that role and they wanted to change it. He has reserved an everlasting chains under darkness for the judgment of the great day. Look at how the NIV states that. The angels who did not keep their proper positions of authority. There is a role that a man plays. There is a role that a woman plays. And if you're in your lane, it creates something that is absolutely unbreakable. And it's really cool when you see it work like it's supposed to work. Okay, Ephesians 5. What I want to do is go all the way to the end. Who was it? Was it Stephen Covey in Seven Habits of Highly Effective People? He talked about begin with the end in mind. So if I'm going to go to Orange Beach for the feast, I don't get in my car and say, I don't know where I'm going, so let's start heading west. I would be going in the wrong direction. All right? Where are you trying to get to? This is the end of Paul's statement. There goes my cough. Sorry, still not over that cough yet. It sneaks up on me. So Paul's going to go through this whole statement about women's roles and men's roles, but what I want to do is I want to start with the end in mind. This is the end of his statement. He says, for this reason, what reason is he talking about? Women, here's what you should do. Men, here's what you should do. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. That's not an option. That's not something where Paul says, if it's okay with both of you, it'd be nice if you did this. No, this is because of something that he's about to say. A man and a woman should be joined together in marriage. They should leave their mom and dad's family, start their own family, and be one flesh. And we're going to talk a little bit about one flesh, what that means. But then he adds the linchpin to this, verse 32. This is a great mystery. Why was marriage created? And marriage was created. Humanity didn't invent marriage. Religion didn't invent marriage. God created it as a part of his creative order. He created marriage and he created it for a purpose. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. What is the reason for marriage? It's to show Christ as the husband and the church as the wife. And if we understand the role that Jesus Christ plays and the role that the church plays, we can see that in the marriage ceremony. And we talk about that. We read this in the marriage ceremony all the time, that this was not a man-made creation. This was a God-ordained institution, the terms that we use. And we put that front and center in all that we do. The same is true with marriage. God wants us to emulate something that he is given. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to leave this up here, and we're going to talk about this in just a little while, but I'm going to take a side angle here and talk about something. I want to talk about dating and career development. So obviously, those of you that are in here are married, and you're on the tail end of your career. You can sleep during this. But for those of you that aren't married yet or starting out a career, I want to make a statement. This whole thing about role, about gender roles and all of that, has gotten down into dating, and it's gotten down into career development. This drift away from men being in their proper roles and women being in their proper roles, and I'll explain what I mean by that. Over the past 20, 25 years, Mr. Horchek had me as the minister that was over the young adult program in Dallas. And so we would have young adult Bible studies. We'd sit down and talk. And I heard there, and I have heard here, a couple of things. I have talked with a number of young adult single women over the past 20, 25 years, and they've told me, almost to a lady, they want the men to pursue them. Now, I don't mean stalk them. There's a difference between those two words, right? I've said sometimes to females, I said, hey, you were talking to so-and-so. Did you get his number? And the answer back was, he didn't ask for mine. I want him to ask me. I want him to ask me out on a date. I want him to make the first move. I want to be pursued. But society doesn't tell you that. Society says you shouldn't do that. Men shouldn't open a car door for a woman anymore. Men shouldn't do this, or if you date, you should be Dutch. Ladies in the church don't want men to be emasculate. I had one young adult say to me one time, when y'all, meaning my generation, are gone, I'm afraid because a lot of the guys, they're not pursuing a career. They're not driven, right? And these young ladies that are driven to get a career, driven to be successful, men, sometimes you're behind on that eight ball, and you shouldn't be. So step up to the plate and start pursuing these women. If it isn't meant to be, you'll find out. Marlis and I both had relationships, dating relationships, before we found each other, and they were helpful for us. They helped us figure out what we did and didn't like. It's not that I sat down and said, okay, don't like that, let me write that down on the list. But in one sense, we kind of did. You find out things that you do like, you find out things that you don't like. I can remember taking one of my girlfriends home, and my mom pulled her aside and said, you're not right for my son. And I couldn't see it at the time. I see it now, but I couldn't at the time. By the way, I brought Marlis home, and within 5 minutes, she said to me, she pulled me aside and said, this is the one. She had never met her before. It took her 5 minutes. She saw something as an adult that it took me a while to see, but dating helped me do that. Men, take the lead again. Career orientation. Women are encouraged to pursue higher education. And men, sometimes, you need to get out of the women's way. You need to let them do what they need to do. I'm not saying that men should have better jobs or higher pay, not at all. But you both should be pursuing career. You both should be pursuing education. You need to do that part. This goes back a long way. When I worked at Nortel, I tell a lot of stories about Nortel. We were required to take diversity training. Anybody have to do that in their job? Okay. Here's what I was told. This was almost 30 years ago. And I was so upset by this that, stupid me, I held my hand up and questioned it. And almost got fired for it. So here was the statement. This was a man, this was a vice president. He said, in 20 years, there will be no place for white males in the workplace. Okay, so I have a daughter and I have a son. So what he was saying is, my daughter will do well in her career, but don't bother sending your kid to school. Don't bother. I held my hand up and I said, so that's great for my daughter, but what about my son? His immediate answer back was, that's the attitude we're trying to drive out of this company. That was 30 years ago, and it hasn't gotten any better. For those of you, we've got several in here who are in HR. You probably have seen that word. A lot of ladies are really driven to do good in their career, but the guys sometimes seem to almost be stuck trying to figure out what they want to do, and that's causing a problem. So, guys, I'm telling you, man up, right? Get out there. Pursue your career. Pursue dating. Get involved in things. That's going to help. Okay. Off my soapbox, back to Ephesians 5. Again, there's nothing new here, but this gives us perspective. If we understand the role of a husband and a wife, of a father and a mother, of children and parents, then we understand the role of Christ in the church. And that's what it is that Paul is trying to explain to us. So as we look through this, there's actually a list here. Let's start and let's see what it is that he said. Let's go back to verse 25. Now, men, I'm going to talk about the role of men to start with. The list of things that Paul says men need to do is a whole lot longer than the list for women. And that's because men don't learn fast enough. And sometimes we have to be hit in the side of the head with a 2x4 to be able to figure out what's going on. Women, stop nudging your husbands. When you look at what it is that Paul is saying, he's going to give a list of things that the man needs to do. He wouldn't mention this if this were obvious. He would mention it because he saw it then as a problem, and it's still true today. And here's what he starts out. Husbands, love your wives. Well, yeah, duh, right? I mean, I love her, and I tell her I love her, and I kiss her in the morning, and I, you know, she makes my coffee. I love that, and Paul is like, guys, get your head straight and let's talk about this. He says, love your wives, but then he qualifies it. Just as Christ loved the church and gave himself for her. He was so much in love with his wife, the church, he was willing to die for humanity. You willing to do that, guys? Now, obviously, we can't die for our wife's sins. That's beyond the point of what this is trying to say. But you can and should take the proverbial bullet for your wife. If she needs defending against, then the husband, a part of your role is love your wife as Christ did and be willing to sacrifice yourself, maybe even some of your self-esteem, to be able to support your wife. Love your wife as Christ loved the church. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. When you get into issues that happen in marriage, don't take your grievances to other people and start talking about them. You don't go outside. Jesus Christ, when I'm sinning, he doesn't send an email to all of you and say, "Do you know what your pastor did?" That's just not how he handles the marriage. And we shouldn't be handling that in our marriage the same way. We need to defend each other. Work out the grievances with prayer and with conversation. And you do that internally. Defend her when she needs it. That's what he's saying here. Love your wives enough that you would be willing to give yourself for her. That is a level of love that is unusual and not normal in regular relationships. That's just not how people work. But let's go on with the list. That he might sanctify and cleanse her with the washing of water by the word. Now, I'm going to go back in all of these and start with love your wives by sanctifying her. What I'm going to ask this, I want this said out loud. What does the word sanctify mean? You've heard this over and over and over again. Set apart for a holy purpose. Your wife should, in your mind, should be set aside for holy purpose. That is something that no other woman in your life, man, no other woman has that station, has that special sanctification. If you love her like Christ loved the church, you will sanctify her. You will set her apart for holy use. That completely changes the scenario. If you think about it, that sets her in a position where she is honored above all women for the rest of the world. Sanctified, to set apart for holy use, in a position different than all other women. She should be made to feel special because she not only is special, but her role as a female and as a mother and as a wife is holy. It was created by God for a reason. How is Christ treating us now while he waits for the marriage supper? He treats us, he sanctifies us. As the husband, he is sanctifying the wife. Men, as the husbands, you are to sanctify your wife, just as Christ is doing with the church. Set us aside for holy use. Where is the husband's focus? Is it on his wants or his needs? Does this say, set her apart so he can get her what he wants? No, that's not what sanctification is. Look at verse 27. That he might present her to himself a glorious church. Setting someone apart, sanctifying them for a holy purpose. In other words, men, you recognize that this role that the woman plays is created by God and is sacred, it's holy. That you would then want to present her to yourself a glorious church, a glorious wife, a glorious mother, a glorious wife. Not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that she should be holy and without blemish. Men, in your role, you need to treat her in such a way that you keep her pure. You keep her clean. You keep yourself pure. You keep yourself clean. You don't introduce filth into the marriage. Guys, think about this when dating, as an example. When Jesus Christ is working with us, there's nothing untoward in his dealing with us while he waits. So when we're dating, guys, we should see women as someone's future wife. Maybe when I was dating Marlis, it didn't take me long to think in our dating relationship, I think I'd like to marry this woman. But I also had other ladies that I dated before Marlis. She had other men that she dated before I came along. And my responsibility was to make sure that the woman that I dated, who did not become my wife, was pure when she entered her marriage. That was my role as man, is to keep her pure when I dated. And the same was true when we dated heading toward marriage. Think about this when you're dating. You should want your wife to be pure when she enters marriage, so you don't want other guys that are dating her to make her impure. And you want to make sure that the women that you date along the way are also pure. We should be doing this for our future or our current marriage, keeping the problems away from the marriage. Verse 28, so husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. This goes back to becoming one flesh, and we'll talk about that more in just a minute. We should think about our wives as being a part of our own bodies. Verse 29, no one ever hated his own flesh, but nursed it and cherished it just as the Lord loves the church. Love her as your own body, which you are in God's eyes, one flesh. If you mistreat your wife in the role of the husband, you are mistreating yourself and you're mistreating your marriage, something that God has put very sacred. And he takes that very seriously. If her role is sacred in his eyes, then you better treat something sacred as sacred and make sure that you're handling it the proper way. You should be doing everything to keep them, guys, the women, and yourself free from harm, free from blemish, free from spot. Sanctify, cleanse, present, no spot, no wrinkle, holy, without blemish. That's the man's role in taking care of the ladies. Ladies, what's your role? Notice how long this is and how short that is. There's a reason for that. Like I say, guys sometimes need to be talked to a little bit more tersely, which I did in this. I hope I didn't upset anyone. The role of a woman. Very first thing it says, wives, submit to your husbands. This was one of the questions I had. What does submit mean? All right, we're going to talk about this today. I had a young lady, this probably goes back 15 years. It was a friend of mine, not in the church, and she wanted me to perform her wedding. And I said, sure, I'll do that. Here is the ceremony that we use. Well, she said, we're going to strike submit, and we're going to strike obey. And I said, I won't do the ceremony otherwise. And she said, why? And I said, I'm not reading a ceremony that I wrote. I'm reading a ceremony that God wrote as he created men and women for marriage. I'm not going to leave something out. If I'm going to go before God and say, unite this as a husband and wife, they both need to understand their roles. So when you see this and it says, wives, submit to your husbands, do you say, as you're reading that, do you say submit with a snarl? I have to submit to that man, right? If so, what does that mean, guys? You're not sanctifying her, right? We'll talk about that more as we go along. Submitting to your husband, it says, as to the Lord. How does Christ treat us? Is it hard for us to submit to Jesus Christ? Do I always obey him? No. Because I'm a human and I sometimes, well, I'm also male and I do stupid things. So there's a time when God has to kind of say, you know, Phil, come on, dude, let's fix this problem. But he treats me with respect. He loves me. He sanctifies me. He sets me apart. It is not hard for me to submit to him. Young ladies that aren't married, if you marry the right person, it will not be hard to submit. And if you marry a jerk, it will be. One of the reasons why we in the ministry, and I am actually not allowed to perform a ceremony for somebody that is in the church and somebody that is out of the church. I am physically not allowed to do that. There's a reason for it. You're going in to a marriage with a future problem just waiting to happen. And I know there are success stories out there. We've got success stories sitting right here. And I'm proud of that. But 9 times out of 10, those problems occur. And it's something that doesn't need to be. So, ladies, choose carefully. When you go through dating, you choose carefully. Guys, when you're going through dating, you do the same thing. Don't just put your best foot forward. Make sure that that best foot really is a good foot, and prepare yourself for it. Men, you must become someone that your wife would want to submit to. Verse 23. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. Is the husband the head of the wife because he's better? No. Is he the head of the wife because he's smarter? Nope. He is the head of the wife because Christ is the head of the church. There's a role that Christ is playing, and he wants marriage to help us understand our relationship as the bride, as the wife, to Jesus Christ. The husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church. He is the savior of the body. He's the one that that sets her apart. He's the one that does the things that helps bring all of this together. Therefore, just as the church is subject to Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. How does the church act right now in honor of Jesus Christ? And again, men, this includes you. We are in the role of the female as members of the church. Jesus Christ is our husband, and we are in the role of the female. We submit to Jesus Christ. As you submit to him because of his righteousness, is your wife able and willing to submit to you because of how you handle yourself? That goes a long way. What does submitting to your husband look like? I want to put this scripture up here. We normally don't think about this in marriage, but this uses that same word, submit. James 4, verses 7 and 8. This is our submission to God. Look what it says. It says, therefore submit to God, and there's a period after it. But it isn't just because, well, I'm great and you're not, so you submit to me. He's explaining now why submitting to him is so important. If you submit to God, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. There won't be any room for Satan to get in between your marriage because I am submitting to Jesus Christ, where Satan can't get in. That's true in marriage. If I'm in my role and my wife is in her role and Satan tries to come between us, he won't be able to. Because we're doing our parts. We're keeping our roles. Draw near to God, he will draw near to you. Draw near to your husband, he will draw near to you. If you are doing your role, ladies, and he is doing his role, men, it brings you together in a bond that can never be broken. Now, I'm putting this up here. This is my statement. This isn't anything that I saw written down. It's just as I got to thinking about this. When the husband, and I'm saying when, not if, when the husband sanctifies his wife, puts her in a place of special honor, of holiness, and she submits to him, follows his loving lead, nothing can break that bond. Nothing can get between it. That is a marriage that cannot fail, just as the marriage between Jesus Christ and the church cannot fail. Now, this goes probably back 30 years. Mr. Horchek, as I was learning this before being sent down here, we went on some marriage counselings that were pretty tough. And I remember one where the husband and wife were sitting in the same room together, and you could almost expect this. He takes his finger and he says, "She won't submit to me." And I didn't say it, which I'm surprised because I do have a big mouth, but I thought, I wouldn't submit to you either. I didn't blame her. It wasn't that she wasn't doing her role, he wasn't doing his, to allow her to do hers. And there's this constant conflict that was going on. Whenever that happens, I always point back to verse 21, which is before verse 22. Verse 22 says, wives, submit to your husbands. But look at verse 20 and 21. It says, therefore, actually verse 19, therefore do not be unwise, but understand what the will of God is. What is the will of God? Giving thanks for all things to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, our husband, submitting to one another in the fear of God. Submitting to one another. Guys, I hate to say this, I don't hate to say this, but there will be times when you will be wrong. I can't be. Oh boy. If you go into marriage thinking that you're right, and if you're wrong, you'll be wrong at the top of your lungs. You're not fulfilling your role, and she will not submit to you. And I don't blame her. So there are going to be times when you do things where the wife is going to have to step up and say, that was wrong. That is not not submitting. That is her stepping up and saying, I am in my role and you are in your role and you did something wrong and I'm the one as your wife to explain it to you. And that is appropriate and that's proper. That's not submitting. There will be times, husbands, when you will make the wrong decision. How should a wife handle that? Should she submit, rolling over and playing dead? You know, some people look at that and say, well, I have to submit to him, so even though he's being a jerk, I just have to submit. No, far from it. You stand up in your role and you make your marriage stronger. You've got to do that. Submitting doesn't mean rolling over and playing dead. Submitting means when he's in his role and you're in your role, he leads the family, and that's appropriate. It's proper. If you want to read an example of this, I won't turn there. I'll just give this to you. You can study this on your own. Go to 1 Samuel 25 and read the example of Abigail and Nabal. Remember that story? Nabal was a jerk. And he said something stupid to David, King David, and David almost got to the place where he had his sword out and he was headed over to not only kill Nabal, to kill Abigail, and to kill all his children. I'm going to wipe their family from the face of the earth. How did she handle it? Did she go to him and say, you stupid jerk? She didn't do it. She didn't go to him because he was drunk, so she knew better than to face it at the time. But she solved the problem. She went to David and said, my husband was wrong. I'm sorry. Please don't wipe our family out. David said, it's a good thing you came to me, or this would have been a problem. She goes back, and the next day, when he's not drunk, she says, I took care of this. Here's what I did. That's a different way of handling it than just popping off and getting angry. Learn some of these stories. You know, being submissive doesn't mean that you can't have a really effective role in the family either. Think of the Proverbs 31 woman. She considers the field and buys it. She's in the family business. She's doing business transactions. This isn't one higher or lower than the other. This is playing the roles that we should take. Men, there will be times when you must lovingly submit to her ideas when you're wrong. And take that seriously. God designed marriage and expects us to mirror his design. Now, fortunately for us, we are married to a perfect spiritual being. Ladies, you are not married to perfect spiritual beings. Not yet. We've got a lot to learn, so give us some slack. But there's nothing wrong with standing up and saying, this is wrong, and this needs to be corrected. But you don't do it argumentatively. You don't do it yelling and screaming. And guys, you should never yell and scream back. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and the guy was, they got into this feminism, male and female thing. And one of the ladies brought up, she said, well, so the mores have changed a lot in society, where hopefully we're getting better at this now. But do you remember what, I always forget the name, he's 007, Sean Connery. Remember what Sean Connery said? And he goes, yeah, I remember. He said, and I'm kind of quoting here, you should never hit a woman, but occasionally you might need to slap her around some. No, guys, that is not how you handle it. And ladies, you shouldn't be handling it that way either. There is a way in your role to discuss things logically. Let's go to Revelation chapter 19. Here's the end result of where the wife needs to be and the husband needs to be in regards to Christ in the church. Revelation 19, verse 7 and 8. As I read this, I'd like for you to put yourselves in that role. Let us be glad and rejoice and give God the glory, for the marriage of the Lamb has come, and his wife has made herself ready. He's already ready, and he is preparing his wife. He is in his role helping the wife, the church, by sanctifying her, setting her apart for holy use, treating her specially, keeping her pure, protecting her. He's doing his role. But she is also preparing herself to be the bride of Jesus Christ. And to her, to the woman, to the church, it was granted to be arrayed in fine linen, clean and bright. For fine linen is the righteous acts of the saints. Jesus Christ, as the husband, is already, as you would, might say, in pure light. He is already righteous. It's something that we're learning. But marriage should help us understand that as well. Women, you should be getting yourselves righteous right before God, right in your role. Men, you should be doing the same thing for your role. Are we keeping ourselves pure from this world? Are we in a proper relationship with Jesus Christ? That should be how we treat our marriage as well. And I'd like to return to the verse that I started with, because after Paul's talking about the role of the men and the women, he says, "For this reason," verse 31, "a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." I'm going to restate this. For this reason, marriage, as instituted by God, should be a man and a woman coming together as one flesh, coming out of the households that they were in and forming a new household. He created marriage by design to help us understand the role of Christ in the church. And he says that this is a great mystery, but I speak about Christ and the church. How does the church treat and respond to our husband, Jesus Christ? How does he treat us when we fall short? I think the answer to both of those questions is with love and compassion. The same love and compassion that he has for us, we should have for one another. Our relationship should be so strong with him that nothing will ever come between us. And that same principle applies, as it does in the church, to marriage right now. The way we treat our spouses should reflect an unbreakable bond. When you hear "become one flesh," and you think of a husband and a wife. In fact, this isn't in the marriage ceremony, but I always do this when I'm doing a marriage. I'll say, at the end of it, I'll say, "By joining your right hands with my hand, I'll ask God to unite you in marriage." And in the prayer, I will say, "They bowed down as two people, they will get up as one." Because that's the way he sees it. When you come up out of that prayer in the marriage ceremony, when you are properly married to the right person who is a part of God's church, a part of God's way of life, God does no longer sees you as two separate individuals. He sees you as one flesh. Do you ever think about becoming one flesh with our relationship with Jesus Christ? We're going to become spirit beings. We're not going to be like the angels who were created for a specific job but can't be a part of the family of God. We will actually have, as I said the last time I spoke here, we'll have God's DNA, and he will see us as one flesh. I'd like to end this sermon with Romans chapter 1, verses 18 through 21. Marlis and I listened to this on the way up today when we were coming here. We don't normally think about this in relation to marriage, but I'd like for us, as I read through this, to apply this to marriage. This is something that God put down in his word that Paul talked about in Romans chapter 1. Verse 18, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men who suppress the truth in unrighteousness." What truth am I talking about for this sermon? Marriage was created by God to reflect Jesus Christ and the church. That is something that he created. Notice verse 19. "What may be known of God is manifest in them, for he's shown it to them." He gave men and women marriage to show what the family of God is going to be like. Why do we have marriage? There is a real important reason why we have marriage. We have marriage to show the relationship between Jesus Christ and the church, and that relationship between men and women. Verse 20. "For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes," what it's going to be like to be married to Jesus Christ, what it's going to be like to be in the kingdom of God, "are clearly seen, being understood by the things that were made," that were created. Marriage was created to show us what the family of God is going to be like. "Even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are," or should be, "without excuse. Because although they knew God, they didn't glorify him as God, nor were they unthankful, but they became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened." And society has gone off the rails when it comes to this very important aspect. What happens when humans mess with what God has created? it not only incurs his wrath, but he pulls back on his relationship with humanity, and he allows them to fall into darkness. And that darkness has led this society to devalue marriage. I'd like to look at just this one item, marriage, today. I'm going to give you a list of things. There's just a couple that I thought of. You can think of others. Marla's thought of some more after I gave it in Laurel last week. If marriage had its proper role in society, what evils that this world has would immediately be gone. If men were in their role and women were in their role and marriage was treated honorably, I'll give you a list of things. Promiscuity, gone. Would never happen. Pornography, gone. Because men wouldn't, women wouldn't get into that. Sexually transmitted diseases. You can end STDs in one generation if everybody only has relations with within the marriage family. It'll stop in one generation. It'll be gone. Improper dating. Gone. Because men and women, when they're dating, are wanting to keep themselves and the other one pure so that when they get into marriage, improper dating. Divorce would stop. There would be no such thing as divorce. Gender roles. Do you realize that? All this gender nonsense right now, if men and women were in their proper roles, there would be no boy saying, I don't know if I want to be a boy or a girl. You don't have a choice. There is a role that you were created to play. That would evaporate. Battle between the sexes, the list goes on and on and on. Just one thing, just having the right aspect in marriage. Our goal as members of the church should be to return marriage to its God-ordained intention. That's where we need to take this. If we do, it will give us light to see his plan. We'll understand the family of God better. It will, in return, provide us with stronger marriages and more stable families. And who wouldn't want that? Well, Satan wouldn't. Because what our marriage to Jesus Christ means is that we will get a position of being in his family. That's something that he wanted and couldn't get. So he wants to try and make sure that you can't either. Thankfully, this world's darkness, brethren, is going to be removed one of these days, and we'll get marriage back to where it belongs. But we can start working on that now, and I hope and pray that we all will.